Find this podcast and others like it at the number one new media network, Podshow.com. Better, faster, stronger. And now with new minty fresh scent.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Peter Maverick.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This Queer Cast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Always worth it. American Airlines, offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow. LaSalle Bank. LaSalle Bank, make it more possible. And you are listening to the Windy City Queercast. This is a very special remote edition. I am Peter Maverick, and I am joined here by a good friend of mine, Sean Bodner. Sean, how are you today?
I'm doing very well, Peter. Thank you for asking me to do this exciting podcast with you.
You're on the program.
Yes.
Welcome. Well, the reason we're recording live is because we've just come from seeing one of the previews of Execution of Justice. It's Emily Mann's play, now playing at the Victory Gardens Greenhouse. And this is also the program that Amy Matheny is in. She's in this little program going on here. So Amy and I sort of figured out that it would probably be a good idea not to have her talk together, do the banter, and to have someone come in and in her stead. So you're virtual Amy today.
Well, you know, I want to be an objective, you know, reviewer of the show. And I think that, you know, I just want to say that I think Amy was beautiful, effervescent, and compelling. And she was the best one in the play.
But I don't know, tell that to her girlfriend. But, well, let's preface the play real quick.
Oh, awesome.
And Sean's pie just arrived. We're actually sitting at Clark's on Clark, the one in the Lincoln Park area. It's delightful. There's snow on your pie. That's delicious.
I think it's powdered sugar.
Oh, okay. Six of one, half a dozen of the other. So the show is, the program, the play, let me choose the right noun here. The play is called The Execution of Justice. And for those of you who aren't familiar with this particular production, it's actually based on a lot of the trial and a lot of the issues surrounding the assassination of Harvey Milk and George Moscone. George Moscone was the mayor of San Francisco, and Harvey Milk at that time was the city supervisor. So it's an interesting contrast between gay and straight worlds, and this is put on by About Face Theater, who's always known for doing more queer-flavored productions there, but I have to say this was the first time I had ever actually seen this play. I'd heard about it quite a bit, and I've heard about a lot of different people who've done it and a lot of programs, but I've never actually seen this particular one. Sean, for you, were you familiar with the story at all, history?
No, I mean, I'd never heard about it. I mean, it happened recently in 1978, but, you know, just growing up in Chicago in the Midwest, you know, I really wasn't, you know, aware of what was going on in California and San Francisco, so it kind of caught me by surprise that something this significant really wasn't on my radar.
Do you, you know, I know some guys they're very, hyper savvy in their queer history and everything like that, either for studying it in school or just actively pursuing that kind of information. Where would you put yourself on the scale? I mean, do you know a lot of gay history or do you not know a lot of gay history?
I know a little bit about it. I mean, I know about Stonewall, but probably, you know, not as much as probably you know, but, you know, just things like this kind of, you know, just take me by surprise and, you know, what people go through. And you know, I've been to San Francisco, you know, a couple years ago, and it seems like things have kind of returned to normal, and it's really not, you know, the tumultuous event that it was. But, yeah, I mean, it kind of caught me by surprise.
So, What are your thoughts on the, I mean, I guess let's abstract ourselves from the production at all, because I think the interesting thing about this play is that it is so rich with historical information. What are your thoughts on the whole thing? It's pretty intense.
I mean, the thing that I was surprised about is that the mayor actually had his will in the case that he was going to be, you know, assassinated.
Harvey Milk, actually.
Harvey Milk, yeah. Okay. So, I mean, that just makes you think. I mean, people back then were so afraid that they worried about, you know, getting assassinated. And you know, that's got to be something that you carry around with yourself. And it's just, it's a kind of oppression that, you know, you wish somebody didn't have to go through, and you really feel for the guy. So, I don't know. I mean, it's really compelling kind of history.
Yeah, I definitely think I knew peripherally about the characters, meaning I knew who Harvey Milk was, and I knew who George Moscone was, and I knew that they were assassinated. But in truth, I never really knew any of this backstory, and I never really knew who George White was, and how that all, or who Dan White, excuse me, I got the name wrong, who Dan White was. Dan White was the actual assassin who executed both of them, and I guess I never knew really the circumstances in how it came up. And the interesting thing, now that I've been, you know, anticipating going to see this show and doing a little bit of my footwork to try and learn a little bit of history, because Google is your friend, I have to tell you that, and Wikipedia, it's so insane. The most interesting thing was, this really was kind of a precedent-setting case for the Twinkie defense, which is an actual...
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, and you should laugh, because it's really kind of insane that they actually use it, but the fact that, you know, Dan White was so incapacitated because he was eating junk food and he was under such stress, and that really pushed him to such violent acts, I don't buy that personally. I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it is about defense attorneys, but on one hand, you have to say, okay, you know, they're being an advocate, you know, they're trying to put, you know, the best story, you know, the best spin on things, and on one hand, I'm kind of outraged by it, but on the other hand, I'm pretty entertained by it. Yes. So I don't know what that says about our legal system, but I mean, Perry Mason, Law and Order, all that kind of stuff, it makes for good, you know, good drama and for a good play.
Yeah, absolutely. I think sort of the what I took away from seeing this play, and I think really the message is that number one, oh, awesome, here's my food. Thank you so much. Number one, I think it's important for people to do their gay history. And number two, I think that productions like this and companies that produce historical things like this, because I mean we're not saying this is a documentary, because it wasn't, although they used some archival footage, this obviously was a play written by a playwright about a period in time, and it has an opinion and it has a stance and everything on it. But I think for those people out there who maybe are listening to the show who don't know too much about it, this is a good excuse to find out about it. And I think it's a really good educational lesson, because without knowledge, where are we? You know, right. History should be written by the winners, and I want to be a winner. I want to be a winner.
I want to be a winner too, Peter. The thing about it that I thought was really entertaining, I mean, so they tell you right up front, okay, the guy's guilty. So really what the play's about is, you know, why did he do it? You know, what was behind it? And what I thought was kind of similar to what was going on is you know, you think about that evangelical priest.
Absolutely.
Who was, you know, driven to this kind of weird behavior. You know, is he a closeted homosexual? Is this the kind of thing that brings out rage? I thought about the Kevin Spacey movie, which I can't remember the name of it offhand.
American Beauty?
No. I think it is American Beauty. I think you're right. And in that case, too, I mean, his neighbor is homophobic, and it drives him to murder. So,
yeah.
You know, why he did it, you know, was he doing it because he thought he, you know, was just enraged and that he, you know, I don't know, he thought he was going to do a good job and he just snapped. I don't know. I think that there's a lot of things in our society that if you don't get a chance to express it and to be yourself, then you just end up being kind of squirrely and you know, you're going to go crazy one of these days.
Well, I mean, absolutely. Emily Mann created the play in 1983. And I think what's just so fascinating is exactly as you pointed out, how many parallels there are between that story and what's going on in the world right now. So, I don't know, it almost says that maybe not so much has changed, or maybe more needs to change, or maybe we need to be more conscious of change. I don't really know what that particular message was, but when I first heard about the play and I heard the title, I thought Execution of Justice meant sort of the process. You know,
right.
The financial parallel I would use in my world is executing a trade. It means you do the trade. It means you make it happen. And what I really took away from this was that justice was sort of executed and taken out of the equation here. There really wasn't very much justice served by the verdict of the Dan White trial against these two queer men in the community, these two very public queer men in a queer community, and like you touched on earlier, who had a very real fear that they were going to be assassinated.
Yeah, I mean, any minute. I mean, you're walking down the street, you never know when somebody's going to pull something like this, and it just, it speaks to, you know, the society of fear sometimes that we live in as gay men and women.
To frame the time even better, one of the characters at one point in the show says, you know, Kennedy was assassinated, and then shortly after that, Martin Luther King was assassinated as well. So that was, as soon as he made that line, it sort of snapped into my mind that, you know, Reagan was kind of shot at a couple times when I was a little kid, but nobody's really, it hasn't really, you know, I guess I didn't grow up in that particular.
Are people less angry, or the Secret Service that much better, or
I don't really know.
You know what it is? It's internet porn, Peter. I think it's people's ability to get their porn fresh off the internet every morning with their coffee, their bagel.
Bacon, eggs, and sex.
The one scrambled egg that Peter's eating.
With the North Shore potatoes, because we are at Clark's and they're delicious.
Yes.
But I don't know, I highly recommend the play for anybody, and Amy is actually going to have a fantastic interview coming up later in the show with some of the folks from the Execution of Justice, so we definitely want you to stick around with that. We've also got some news for you, and we've got a couple other little quirky things that make the Windy City Queercast the Windy City Queercast. So Sean, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Peter.
For being with us, and we'll be back right after this.
Find out what happened before Dorothy dropped in at Wicked, Chicago's newest smash hit musical, and the untold story of the Witches of Oz.
Popular, I know about popular.
Popular, USA Today calls Wicked a triumph. And Time magazine writes, if every musical had the brain, the heart, and the courage of Wicked, Broadway really would be a magical place. Now, this Grammy Award-winning blockbuster has cast its spell over Chicago. Wicked, at the Ford Center for the Performing Arts Oriental Theater.
And nobody in all of Oz, no wizard that there is or was, is ever gonna bring me.
Call 312-902-1400 or visit BroadwayInChicago.com today. Because the longer you wait, the longer you'll wait to see Wicked, sponsored by Chase.
Need a vacation from your holiday? Crave some real relaxation and cuddle time without Cousin Susie watching your every move? Not to worry, GayHotelDiscounts.com is here to help. If you're a queen in need of a king, bed that is, you can find the luxury you desire at a price you can afford. Powered by the strongest search engine on the web, GayHotelDiscounts.com are your gay travel experts.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Camouflage Suitmaker.
Mr. Camouflage Suitmaker.
Your amazing skills of deception can trick a deer into thinking we're just a tree out for a walk, or a shrub having a cup of coffee.
Shrub having coffee.
Tirelessly you perfect your artistry. The squiggly black line, the blob, the slightly larger blob, all in spectacular shades of green.
Green, green, green.
Thanks to you, we look fabulous in or out of the forest with a suit that can be easily accessorized with face paint and a few twigs.
Dressed to kill.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Camouflage Suitmaker, because when it comes to blending in, you really stand out.
Mr. Camouflage Suitmaker.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Culture Club.
Culture Club.
Culture Club.
Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of January 22nd, 2007, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
About Face Theater presents Execution of Justice, Emily Mann's landmark play exploring the assassination of Harvey Milk, the trial of Dan White, and the infamous Twinkie defense. This must-see production, directed by Gary Griffin of Broadway's The Color Purple and The Apple Tree, is playing now at the Victory Gardens Greenhouse, 2257 North Lincoln. For tickets to Execution of Justice, call 773-871-3000 or visit aboutfacetheater.com.
The Wooden Breeks is playing now at the Looking Glass Theater in the Water Tower Waterworks. Heidi Stillman directs Glenn Berger's masterful tale of a man tormented by the memory of his beloved and stuck in his own story. Join dreamers, schemers, and would-be lovers navigating their way through the murky Scottish town of Brood. For tickets, call 312-337-0665 or visit lookingglasstheater.org.
And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
This is Logan Schwarzengrubenier from the 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, and my two dads and I are completely buzzing about this week's Bee in My Bonnet. This bee is nosediving as fast as a Republican Congress. My dad and I have been celebrating for a whole month. First, Christmas Hanukkah Kwanzaa. Then New Year's Eve, and now the return of democracy. My Carl dad said the only thing that could possibly make him happier is a picture of Dick Cheney in a skirt and heels. This is Logan Schwartz and Grubenier, and that's the bee in my bonnet. Be sure to check us out on the web at spellingbeethemusical.com/Chicago.
And this is your Windy City Queercast News.
In response to the scandal of former Representative Mark Foley, the U.S. House of Representatives has overhauled the board that supervises teenage pages. The House voted 416-0 to equalize the political membership of the House page board. This response is based on the Republican chairman who never told two board colleagues that he believed that Representative Mark Foley was a ticking time bomb. The new expanded board also will include a former page and the parent of a current or former page.
In Arizona, State Representative Russell Pierce, who proposed a same-sex marriage ban, announced that he will not follow through with the bill this session, which would amend the state's constitution to restrict marriage to heterosexual couples. Last November, Arizona became the first state to defeat a same-sex marriage ballot initiative.
The Rhode Island Supreme Court has requested more information be provided when an LGBT couple's divorce comes before a lower court to claim jurisdiction over the case. Margaret Chambers and Cassandra Orniston of Providence filed for divorce last year with the Rhode Island Family Court, which then asked the Supreme Court to decide if the Rhode Island judges have authority to grant divorces to same-sex couples. In Rhode Island, the law is unclear on whether same-sex marriages are valid.
In the first protest of its kind in this country, Madison, Wisconsin, leaders will be able to denounce the state's new constitutional ban on gay marriage when they take their oath of office. The city council voted 13-4 to allow hundreds of elected and appointed officials to add a statement saying they are taking the oath under protest because the amendment besmirches our constitution.
In Massachusetts, two lawmakers who are strong backers of same-sex marriage plan to file legislation that would amend the constitution by prohibiting initiative petitions that limit civil rights. Representative Alice Wolf said the citizen petition banning gay marriage, which was signed by 170,000 people, was the initial reason for filing the measure.
Chemicals known to change the sexual characteristics of fish and other animals have been found in West Virginia tributaries of the Potomac River, which runs through Washington, D.C. and surrounding areas. The chemicals contain endocrine disruptors, which can cause birth defects and sexual abnormalities in species ranging from frogs to alligators and perhaps humans as well.
Gus Van Sant, the openly gay director of the movie Good Will Hunting, pleaded not guilty to charges of drunken driving and reckless driving. He was ordered to attend a February 9th alcohol diversion hearing. Van Sant was arrested December 21st in Portland, Oregon. Police said he registered a blood alcohol level of 0.19%, more than double Oregon's limit of 0.08%.
And the controversy of Grey's Anatomy has ended with series star Isaiah Washington apologizing. The situation began in October when it was rumored that Washington used the word faggot in reference to co-star T.R. Knight, who has since come out. Things resurfaced January 15th at the Golden Globe Awards when Washington used the word to deny that he had uttered it in October. On January 16th, Knight appeared on The Ellen DeGeneres Show saying, quote, "Washington referred to me as a faggot. Everyone heard it." On January 18th, Washington issued an apology and said, quote, I apologize to TR, my colleagues, the fans of the show, and especially the gay and lesbian community for using a word that is unacceptable in any context or circumstance. I can neither defend nor explain my behavior. I can also no longer deny to myself that there are issues I obviously need to examine within my own soul, and I have asked for help. Washington plans to meet with GLAAD.
And that's your Windy City Queercast News.
Thank you, parents. We hope you enjoyed the fifth graders' orchestra recital.
What if wherever you went, you got more than you were expecting?
Hi, Daddy!
Hey, thanks for watching the kids.
Anytime.
How were they?
Good.
No problems?
Nope. Oh, and I taught Noah his multiplication tables, and I've got Wendy reading Shakespeare.
At LaSalle Bank, we think more is precisely what you should expect. More responsiveness, more service, more convenience. In a word, more.
Hey, Billy.
Hi, Mr. Schmidt.
What are you doing in the bushes?
Oh, I was getting your newspaper.
My newspaper?
Yeah, I must have been off balance when I threw it and I totally missed the porch.
Oh.
I just didn't want you to have to go looking for it.
Thanks, Billy.
And with any luck, our philosophy will catch on everywhere. LaSalle Bank, making more possible. LaSalle Bank N.A., member FDIC.
Windy City Queercast is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago and Wicked, the most popular musical in Chicago history. For tickets, visit wickedthemusical.com/Chicago.
And we're back, folks, and I'm sitting here with Amy Matheny.
Hello.
Hello, lady. We were just talking about your program.
I hear that you were just talking about me.
We were just talking about your program. Just the other night, my friend Sean and I went and saw it. It was delightful. So we wanted to have a little chat with you and, you know, bring people up to speed on what's going on. How about those Bears, girl?
How about those Bears? I have to say, you know, I had this big opening weekend for Execution of Justice. Mm-hmm. And here in a few minutes, I'm going to share with you sitting down and talking with Gary Griffin, the director, kind of right before our press opening, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So you'll hear lots of tweaking of all our sound cues and a live percussionist and all of that. But yeah, you know, it was such a thrilling, thrilling weekend for me. I'm sure for others as well, because I was not only opening this show that I'm really, really proud of, but I had time before the show. Normally Sundays are at 3, but this Sunday, because it was our gala opening, it was at 6. So I had time to watch the Bears beat the Saints. And the Bears are going to the Super Bowl, for those of you. It's kind of a little Bear theme we're having since late last week. The Bear podcast, the Bears going to the Super Bowl. So, I mean, it's awesome.
Well,
awesome.
I'll tell you, even on the Bear tip, we just had a Bear shower contest at Spin the other night.
Well, see, it's and it all was about Bears.
Super hot. I was a little worried the stage wasn't going to hold up right, but it did. It was just fine. There were some big boys in the shower, but it was very
big
handsome.
Big boys in the shower.
It was a beautiful crowd.
There were big boys in the shower last night down at Soldier Field, too,
sure
I bet.
There sure were, girl. I could smell it from here. You know, it was funny. We were standing outside. We took a break during our tech rehearsal, and we ran outside, and someone was smoking a cigarette, and then all of a sudden you could hear, hush! People were like screaming and everything.
Oh,
and I was
like,
I think the Bears won or something.
The Bears did win. And I have to say, watching it on the HD with the TiVo was pretty supersonic. I mean, you can see the blades of grass. It was awesome. It was
awesome.
The
package in high
def. Tiny little spits of snow. It was, you know, and I mean, it's really, I mean, I wanted the Bears to win. Who doesn't want the Bears to win? That's a Chicagoan. But, you know, it did feel, I don't know, it felt weird to beat New Orleans. It feels like they kind of need something as a city, you know, and as a state. But it's the Bears' year, and the Bears are playing the Colts, so it's going to be Indiana and Illinois head-to-head.
Oh.
It's going to be a big one.
They're not playing here, though.
No, they're playing in Miami.
They're playing in Miami.
But
I'm so ignorant.
Yes.
But if they're playing Indiana, how did they play in Miami? Does it always happen in Miami?
Super Bowl. Yeah.
Always happens in Miami.
I think so, yes.
Okay, I don't know.
Honey, don't ask me. I'm a lesbian.
I play badminton and I swim. That's all I do.
Well, what I know is that they're going to Miami. So,
okay. Well, that's good.
I don't
It'll
know if
warm.
It always goes there, but I think so. It's always somewhere.
No, because we had the Super Bowl playoffs here one year, didn't
okay,
we?
Okay, well, then maybe it just happens to be there this year, but I know it's somewhere warm. And
well, that's good.
You know, the interesting thing is that I have hit some golf balls with Peyton Manning, who is the star quarterback of the Indiana Colts. And so my family is feeling very conflicted because they have kind of a connection with Peyton and obviously a connection with Chicago as being their second home. So but I think they'll be rooting for the Bears.
I think so.
I think they'll be rooting for the Bears. But it's a big, big, big celebration. I think the next couple weeks are going to be awesome.
When does it happen?
Man, folks, pick up that night spots next 2 weeks because you will be seeing some Super Bowl parties over the city of Chicago. It will be rocking, I'm telling you.
When does Super Bowl happen?
Super Bowl is February 4th, first Sunday.
It's on my birthday.
It is on your birthday.
Oh, my God. Okay, it's settled. I'm going to the bathhouse on my birthday.
Hey, it's going to be the biggest celebration in Chicago on your birthday.
Right. Well, I mean, I
it's my family's coming to town. They're coming to actually see the play that day. So
really? I think I'm going to... So I bet if you like go to like a Chinese restaurant, it's like, you know, from the movie, The Christmas Story.
Yes, exactly.
Nobody's going
to
be there.
I think that you're going to have to celebrate your birthday on Saturday, Friday, or Monday. People may still be celebrating if we win. You know, they'll be flying back up here. So it should be...
Lucky
I celebrated
me.
My 30th 3 weeks early, so I recommend celebrating the entire fucking month. Is what
I'm stretching it out. Yeah, absolutely, because I'm going to have a lot of... I'm not having one big shebang because I couldn't do all that. But I think, I just didn't really realize that. Wow, so I'm going to be... You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to shop all day on my birthday. There's going to be nobody in the stores.
There's nobody going to be in the stores.
So easy. Oh my goodness. I think I'll have to maybe I'll buy a big screen TV that day.
Maybe you will. Now there may be some people doing that. Maybe some people sold out.
Last minute rushing for everything crazy. Okay,
gosh.
So speaking of television, oh my God, the Food Network. I want a cable that goes right into my artery of Food Network at all times. At all times. This is the most amazing channel I've ever seen in my life. It's like I'm seeing TV in a new way, and I feel so pathetic because everyone's like, well, yeah, girl, duh.
It's true.
It's some good stuff. Rachel Ray is not that bad.
That's true.
I like her little show. I've already made two of her dishes and I was like, oh, that tastes fabulous. And it was so easy. And I made it in under 30 minutes.
Under 30 minutes. I have a cookbook. I have yet to crack it open, but I have the cookbook.
Really? You have her cookbook?
Yes.
Wait, you have a cookbook and you haven't cooked anything from it?
I have many a cookbook. The only one I go back to is like the Savannah Ladies Circle Women's Club. It's like Savannah, Georgia. It's like the best.
Wow.
That one I like a lot.
Sounds very Paula Deen. Lots of butter.
Lard. Put some lard in it. But you know what, folks? It's going to be a big week of talk. So I hope that you'll come back next week. Our next show, we're definitely going to be talking about this big presidential race. The gauntlet has been thrown. We'll talk about that. Also, some other things happening on television. Some of that's going to be in our news.
Yeah, we'll be
today.
Talking a little bit in pieces, little bits and pieces about all that stuff.
But it's going to be a great time. Just sit back and listen. I'm sitting down and talking with Gary Griffin, and if you know much about musical theater on a national level, he was the director of The Color Purple, which is coming to Chicago area. So if you live anywhere in the Midwest and it's harder for you to get to New York, come to Chicago. It's going to be fantastic. We do talk a little bit about The Color Purple. We talk about Execution of Justice in the play, the significance of this play. And I hope people will come out and see it because it's only running through February 18th. So drop everything and get tickets.
It's kind of your duty to do it. It's kind of people's duty to come out and see it because in and of itself, it's a history lesson. If you don't know much about it, and Sean and I actually talked about that. If you don't know much about the story, this play can actually do a lot to teach you about it. And that's so important.
It starts a lot of conversation. And, you know, I'm so surprised that Harvey Milk is not our Martin Luther King. It's just interesting because we wonder what would the potential of what Harvey Milk would have done and George Moscone would have done. You know, what would have happened? What would the length of their legacies be? So it's interesting. So Gary Griffin and I sit down with all the bells and whistles and it's coming up.
Hi, this is Patrick Bristow, and you are listening to the Windy City Queercast. What do you think of that?
Execution of Justice, the drama that explores the trial of Dan White, the man who assassinated San Francisco Mayor George Moscone and openly gay city supervisor Harvey Milk in 1978, is being produced right now by About Face Theater, Chicago's incomparable GLBT company. And they are bringing playwright Emily Mann's play to the stage under the crisp direction of Gary Griffin, who is fresh off productions on Broadway of The Color Purple and The Apple Tree. So, Gary, thanks for sitting down with me.
Thank you.
And talking about this production a little bit. We're sitting here in the Victory Gardens Theater, right off the space. Talk to me about how your relationship to Execution of Justice began.
I really first saw the play when it was in rehearsal and performance in New York in 1986, and when it was sort of at the really at the height of its first round of where, you know, when Emily was first doing it, and when it was sort of still white hot off of you know, it was 7 years after it had after the trial, and I really didn't know a great deal about, I knew the story basically, but I didn't know any, I had no idea of the complexity, what was going on, certainly the story of San Francisco, which is what I think the play really is brilliant at telling, is that it's also the story of a community, what was happening in the community, and the change that was happening in the community, and so I was really taken with it. I was also taken with the way it had been constructed, so it was a play I always wanted to do, and it was about finding the right time, really, in the right company, and this seemed to be the right time and certainly the right company.
So talk to me about how the play is constructed. You refer to that for people who are not familiar with this play.
Well, it's centered on the trial and the storytelling of the trial and that how that unfolded. But then Emily has brought into that a chorus, what she calls the chorus of uncalled witnesses, which are characters who were not called in the trial, but for whom they had important testimonies. And to understand the larger canvas of this story, they were essential. And so it also, I think, that construction constantly is juxtaposed against each other. And so the play is not a courtroom drama as we're used to seeing that in that genre. It sort of takes that form and I think sort of blows it wide open and uses, I think, what are the best things about the conflict and the essential struggle of a courtroom drama, but then really looks at the wider implications and I think really makes the theater a kind of place to explore justice in a particular story. And I think that's what this does, is it's in its own way, it's a sort of theatrical courtroom. Mm-hmm. And how we might use the tools of the theater to ask the questions of justice that the play asks.
And talk a little bit about what was San Francisco like at the time of this trial for people who may be unfamiliar with exactly why these assassinations would have taken place.
Well, prior to the assassinations, I mean, it was an extremely turbulent time because there was a power shift going on. There was now a liberal mayor, George Moscone. There was, the city had elected its first openly gay supervisor, Harvey Milk. And what people, I think a lot of us, our image of San Francisco is a liberal, a gay-friendly,
right.
Beautiful,
Castro.
Yeah, port town. And I think what also we don't always know is that it's also a town, it's an Irish Catholic town, it's dock workers, it has a very powerful cultural history prior to a lot of the change that happened after World War II. And those elements were starting to fight against each other and were about to erupt.
Right.
And this story is really an eruption of a struggle that was happening in the underbelly that had been going on for years. And it really forced, I think it forced the city to confront its true self. And I think that a lot of people were fearing their way of life was threatened, and the riots had as much to do with that as it did with just the trial. It was just this riot was coming, and I think the Dan White trial and the Dan White verdict really was the final straw. But I think it was clearly, as I think the play articulates well, is that that struggle was already happening,
and this just is a wonderful metaphor for what was going on for the city.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's interesting because you talk about, you know, making a community look at itself, mm-hmm. or this incident mm-hmm. caused something that was already existing to happen, and that's something that Emily Mann does mm-hmm. when she writes plays. I mean, she goes in and kind of takes the nexus of a community or a situation, and we'll talk with her later, but something I also think about Face Theater has tried to do mm-hmm. in kind of making the gay and lesbian community look at itself. So talking about the implications of doing this play at this time with Emily's work and what's going on in America today seems very polarized in a similar way.
I think so. I mean, I think, for instance, if we just even to look at the last election, or even one of the divisive issues in America is the issue of gay rights and gay politics and the issues
and gay
of
marriage.
And gay marriage
yeah.
and certain gay civil liberties. I mean, that issue is hot button And if you want to find, if you want to divide people, it's an issue to do it with. And I think that was clear at the time of this play, and it clearly hasn't changed. I also think there are, though, the questions. I think a lot of us in the last 20 years have seen things happen in our justice system and that have just really challenged our belief in it. And I think this play shows us, I think, how the system works in a way that we may understand if we struggled with the OJ verdict, if we struggled with many issues, yeah. I guess, that we can look at it and say justice is not, the justice system isn't necessarily set up to save, to solve sociological issues. Huh. It's there to, for one person to come before the system who's been charged with a crime and be given an, and be given a voice. But that's, right. But we want it to be something that I think has a societal implication. It just can't ever do it.
Yeah. So. One of the wonderful things that you've done with this production is bring your friend and collaborator, Andy Jones, to add a musical kind of pulse and life and rhythm to this show. And many people probably have seen, if they are in Chicago area, if they've been in New York now, they've probably seen a musical production that you've done, either as large as Color Purple, which will be coming to Chicago, or even Spare Down, the way you did your production of My Fair Lady. You know, what is it about the musicality, working with Andy and creating a rhythm and a tone to the show?
Well, when I reread it, I was struck by the rhythm of the piece again. I hadn't, and the way even Emily, if you look at the way it is on the page, it almost looks like a Shakespeare play in terms of there's the way line breaks and composition versus things that are more prose. And I was really struck by that, and I felt, though, that reading the opening Sister Boom Boom Cop scene, that there was a way to sort of theatricalize that undercurrent. And that was really where it came from, was the notion that there's an undercurrent and there's another. And I think it would be interesting almost to go back now and hear the play without the drums and see if we really miss them. I think we would. We because they've become sort of an essential part of the storytelling.
Do you always hear plays before you see plays?
I feel their rhythms. I'm not sure hearing them, but I tend to be, if I read a play and I'm in the first reading or two, if I'm not sort of feeling the pulse of it, I generally know it's probably not a good play for me.
Yeah.
Where if I am,
I go, okay,
because that's, everything sort of comes out of the rhythm. Everything translates itself for me into rhythm.
Yeah.
Because it's just what I respond to in the theater.
Yeah.
As also even, because there's visual rhythm and there's all the compositional rhythm of everything, but it for me is always sort of started with that.
Right. Well, I know we only have a few more minutes because we've got to start our last rehearsal, but I did want to ask you just a couple of things about Color Purple is coming to town, which is great, and Windy City Times has a huge group going in May, which is fantastic.
Great.
But and I know people listening to this podcast will be coming in from all over the Midwest to try to catch this production. And one of the things that I noticed that was really obviously a standout for anybody who is lesbian when you go to see the musical is how satisfying and grateful I think women are going to be who felt possibly that the film really shortchanged probably Alice Walker's initial intention with the movie in not really bringing to the forefront what that lesbian experience was for Celie. And I just wanted to hear from you, you know, what was that process like about talking about exploring that with Marshall,
you know,
and the other creators and
was,
the beautiful song that's in the show?
It was never, it was fascinating in that it was, there was never, ever a discussion other than we're going to do it, this is the way we're going to do it. There was never any doubt about it. I think we all felt strongly that it's about love, that scene, that relationship, and I think that Celie, I think the joy in watching Celie in that moment and finding love in a way that is free
and tender.
Yeah,
examples of it.
Exactly.
Really.
I mean, she really didn't. I mean, there's a scene prior where she's talking about sex with Suge, where she's saying she doesn't get sex because it doesn't seem like anything she would enjoy. And then you watch her begin to open up and go, oh my God, you know, I could really find something, tenderness and and all the things they talk about in that song, maybe this could be. I think she assumed she was someone who wasn't going to have that.
Right.
And I think that supersedes the kind of relationship it is, or how people might be uncomfortable with it. And I think that's one of the things that I'm most proud of, is a lot of people have said to us, because it was about love and because they were so happy for Celie at that moment, that it superseded their uncomfortableness with that they might be watching. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that's what's really important, is we have to teach people that this is about love, and this is about, and the story is about love. And for and I think Alice, I know, feels that Celie's heart is womanist, as she calls it, her word. And she says, so it's a very powerful thing that has to do with her identity, that I also love. And I also think, I just think those, because the play explores them in bigger, in larger terms, it's so great.
Well, how many people are going to see it? You know, how many people already have seen it? And probably, you know, when you look at the African American community,
600 and some
thousand. Well, there you go. He knows. The man knows. But, you know, that's fantastic, though, and also with the African American community, because we've done a lot of stories, and probably more with the male community, about the download type of situation. But, I mean, it's pretty powerful that the African American community who is coming into the theater to see this production is also seeing that in a way that's accepting and beautiful. And it's not perfect, so, and that's also what's good to see.
Exactly.
It's also to see that it's not a Cinderella ending in the way maybe you might think it was going to be.
No.
And I think that's fantastic. Well, last question I want to ask you about is, give me a few words to describe Kristen Chenoweth, because of course our gay listeners just love her. And
she's the best.
Yeah,
she's
you just did the apple tree with her on Broadway, Roundabout.
I really mean it. I mean, she's a really great lady and a true pro and a real smart, and it was an honor to work with her, and fun. And, really,
and she's like
fun.
The new star of the time, isn't
yeah,
she? Of the
I
stage,
think so.
She walks.
It's
into
it's a miraculous talent to be around, because she obviously she's talented, but there's also this sort of radiant spirit inside her, and she's a person of great faith, but tremendous soul, and she's. I'm just thrilled that she's my friend and someone I love working with, and it was a great thing to spend that much time with her and get to do that show with her. So.
Well, everybody try to catch Apple Tree.
Yes, do.
And Color Purple comes to Chicago this spring, but you have a limited amount of time to see Execution of Justice. It's playing at the Victory Gardens Greenhouse, 2257 North Lincoln Avenue, through February 18th. So if you want tickets, call the VG Box Office, 773-871-3000, or visit aboutfacetheater.com. And Gary, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And folks, thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light, always worth it.
And LaSalle Bank. LaSalle Bank, making more possible.
And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com. So that's our show. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick. Please comment on our shows at windycityqueercast.com and in iTunes.
And email us for giveaways at WCMGPromo@AOL.com.
And folks, we want to tell you that the next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.
The best and the brightest, served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Podshow and Limelight.